This is Vulnerability Matters from the Money Advice Trust. Hello, hello. Welcome back to Vulnerability Matters. I'm Chris Fitch. Now, we're told that most people have a type, but our guest today has a very specific tick list indeed. Romance by Prince William, Brad Pitt, and, at the last count, over 100 different versions of Keanu Reeves. No way. Yes way. Becky Holmes is the author of the enticingly titled Keanu Reeves is Not in Love with You, and has turned what started as a lockdown hobby of scamming the scammers into a much deeper engagement with the multi-million pound industry of romance fraud. So I asked Becky to share this exploration and to explain just why romance scammers love posing so much as oil rig workers, pilots and soldiers, how a two-stage romance fraud requires scammers telling not just blatant lies, but also ultimately the truth about themselves, and what Becky learned from both reading scammers' romance manuals and speaking to the dozens of people who were scammed by them.
Are you looking to strengthen your approach to vulnerability and consumer duty? Join the award-winning Vulnerability Academy, delivered by the Money Advice Trust in partnership with UK Finance. Over 200 professionals have already graduated, and Cohort 15 starts on 14th of April. Don't miss out. Sign up now at moneyadvicetrust.org/academy or click the link in the description.
Becky, great to have you on. Let's cut to the chase. You've had romances with Prince William, Brad Pitt and 82 Keanu Reeves. So how did the woman in a cardigan, your words, not mine, become the most sought after romantic interest for every global celebrity?
I'm going to correct you slightly in that it was 82 Keanu Reeves when I wrote the book. I'm now over 100.
Wow.
Okay.
I know. You cannot
get enough of me.
Congratulations.
How did I become so sought after? So if you engage with a scammer, you are more often than not put onto what they call a suckers list. And to be put onto a suckers list, you don't have to have sent any money. You just have to have engaged with a scammer. And because I do that a lot, sort of for my own amusement, I'm on all sorts of lists. So if, you know, anybody pretending to be anybody will try it on with me.
Fantastic. And how did you tumble into this? It started out as a hobby, didn't it?
Yeah, it started off in lockdown when I had nothing else to do and was absolutely sick and tired of the news and COVID and just ugh. So I joined Twitter, which was much less of a cesspit then than it is now, and was approached by, oh God, like a dozen or so really handsome young soldiers who were all immediately in love with me. And because there were so many all at once, I was very clear that these weren't real. So thinking naively at the time that I would be wasting their time if I engaged with them, that's what I did, and just ended up finding it so funny what I could get away with that I kept doing it.
And you became a global media sensation, as I understand it. My words, not yours.
Where did you get that from?
Well, you've written a book and you've been on a podcast. So it's written the fantastic book, and people listening will know that I'm a miser. I don't usually like to pay for things with my own money, but I actually bought it and it is very, very good. But how do you go from kind of toying with scammers to then writing a book about it?
Well, it's something I never thought that I, you know, when I sort of wrote my first message back to a scammer, I never thought that this was in my future. I was sort of messing around with these scammers and posting the conversations that I was having with them up on Twitter. And people were really kind of engaging with it and were finding it funny. But then at the same time, I started getting messages from genuine victims of romance fraud who kind of said, look, you know, this has happened to me and this is my story. So it became very, very clear that there's a lot more to romance fraud than just messing around with scammers on Twitter. And actually, the more that I spoke to people and the more that I started researching, I thought, my God, there's something in this.
So you've got this book. Everybody should buy it. Everyone should read it. And I was particularly taken by a chapter, sharing my two pennyworth. Apart from being the kind of phrase that my nan might say, you take the, you tell the reader exactly where you think what the world is getting wrong about people who fall victim to romance scams. And I think that's a really good place for this conversation to start. So starting with the stats, which you're quite critical of, can you highlight a couple of key misconceptions about romance scams?
So I think we need to let go of the stereotype. So the stereotype is that this only happens to middle-aged or older women who are bored, lonely, vulnerable, gullible, stupid, desperate. Every sort of headline that you can imagine seeing on the front of the Sun is what we assume that victims of romance fraud are. And it's simply not the case. So coming from somebody who has spoken to dozens of victims of romance fraud, that is not the case. You know, I've spoken to lawyers, CEOs, a detective, even genuinely an actual brain surgeon, which made me laugh because when she said, oh, I'm a surgeon, I said, oh, you're not a brain surgeon, are you? And she said, yes, I'm a neurosurgeon.
Wow, I bet you were thinking gold dust. That's going in.
Yeah, I couldn't believe the fact that I could actually say a brain surgeon. You know, and plenty of men as well. So these are smart, capable people, not the stereotype. Also, another stereotype, I think, would be this idea of people being vulnerable. It happens to vulnerable people. And yeah, sure, it does, of course. But one thing that I feel quite strongly about is that just because somebody is vulnerable at a given moment, you can't necessarily class them as a vulnerable person. Vulnerability does matter. But if you are vulnerable, everybody is vulnerable at any given time. But it doesn't make them, in inverted commas, a vulnerable person. Because there's a stigma around that. You say, oh, that's a very vulnerable person. You imagine somebody who's kind of at home shaking under a duvet. But that's not the case.
So it's about breaking these stereotypes. Maybe think about what vulnerable people are vulnerable to rather than being vulnerable themselves.
Yeah, I think
so. Is there anything else that we get wrong about romance scams?
I suppose another big one for me is when people say, that would never get me. I'm far too clever, or I'm far too mean, or I'm far too cynical. Well, good for you. But anybody who says that they would never be the victim of something, I think is a fool.
Most people I know have been scammed. I think the statistics probably underestimate the ones that are out there, probably underestimate the scale.
Well, one of my subheadings is the stats are, and then I use a rude word, because the problem with romance fraud in particular is that people don't want to report it. You know, there is so much victim shaming. Why would you want to kind of admit that this has happened? So the statistics that we get every year, romance fraud has gone up by this amount or whatever, it's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, and there is, I do a lot of talks at conferences and police, etc. And one thing I always say is there is a scam for everyone. Absolutely everyone, because everybody has something they care about.
Your book really made me laugh, and I have to say, in the world that I work in, there's not many laughs in there. And I laughed not in a derisory scoff that I reserve for my darkest academic enemies. However, it is also a very serious book, and I was really impressed by how you managed the light and the dark. And I wonder, at what point did the interactions that you were initially having begin to feel like something much, much darker?
I think when I started talking to people who'd been the victim of a romance fraud, because until that happened, I mean, of course I knew what romance fraud was, but I only knew what it was from seeing it online and reading the paper and kind of being pulled into all those stereotypes. So when I started speaking to victims who turned out to be quite incredible, intelligent, articulate, sociable people, and they started telling me about the impact that this had had, and I don't just mean financially, but because that's sort of the least impactful bit, actually. You know, it's the emotional damage. I think it was then that I started thinking, hang on a minute, there's a lot going on here in terms of how people are being absolutely ruined.
So let's get a bit deeper into that, and we'll hear some of these about some of the people you spoke to in a moment. But why do oil rig engineers, overseas soldiers and Stockholm-bound pilots make for a bad romance, in your experience, Becky?
Do you know, romance fraudsters, they're really clever in the careers that they choose, because they choose people that it would actually be a nightmare to have a relationship with. They choose careers where the people are just unavailable. So, you know, if you're a pilot or an oil rig worker, or you're away in a war zone or on a peacekeeping mission or whatever it might be that they say, they're not going to be immediately contactable. And there might be problems with the internet, for example, so they can't video call you. Or they might be somewhere where they're not allowed, or there's very, very noisy in the background or something like that. So they always choose, well, no, I should never say always. They very often choose careers where you cannot get hold of them and you can't have what would be considered a normal relationship in terms of communicating. So they can simply, they can type as opposed to chat.
They make errors though, don't they? About their jobs, about their biography.
What I will say is that they do make errors, but unless you have looked into this or you know somebody in that profession, you might not know that they're errors. They've said, oh, you know, I've been on the rig for 3 months, I've got another 6 months to go. I just sort of, I wouldn't pick up on that. But because I then started looking into it for the book and found out that they're only ever on a rig for a matter of weeks before they have to take a break and go back on land. So actually, unless you know somebody who works on an oil rig, why would you know that? Or, you know, people on oil rigs, supposedly on oil rigs, have said, oh, you know, we're not allowed to have video calls, you know, that the signal's not good enough. Well, I found out that they are absolutely encouraged to make contact with family back home. And the fraudsters are very clever in that, you know, they just choose things that lay people like me, you, whoever, wouldn't necessarily know about.
And you called the bluff of Zeltinus, isn't it?
Zeltinus, yeah.
Yeah. Well, tell us how you called Zeltinus's bluff, because he worked on an oil rig.
He did. Well, do you know what? He did work on an oil rig. And then a few months later, I noticed that his profile page on Twitter had said that he was an orthopaedic surgeon. So he'd had a very,
wow, very a polymath.
Change of That's career. He's a very clever man. He messaged me and very, very quickly fell in love with me. I think it might have been about 3 hours. And a few days later, he messaged to say that he really wanted to come and meet me because obviously we were going to have a life together. And he wanted to get off the oil rig, but he didn't have any holiday left. So the boss of the oil rig had said to him, right, you can, but you have to buy some holiday. So it's going to cost you 3,200, I don't know if it was pounds, dollars, euros, he said. And Zeltinus said to me, look, we're obviously in love, you know, can you lend me the money? Now, I don't have that sort of money knocking about. So I thought about this and then I emailed him and said, don't worry, I'll come to your oil rig instead. Now, a few months earlier, I'd been to Iceland with my mum. And whenever I go anywhere interesting, I always get whoever I'm with to take pictures of me because I can use them for situations like this. So I sent him a picture of me on a boat in the middle of whatever freezing cold sea it was. And this guy panicked. He was like, what do you think you're doing? And then he sort of said, you can only get here by helicopter. Now, by such fortune, mum and I had a helicopter trip in this holiday in Iceland. So I was able to send Zeltinus a picture of me in a helicopter saying, don't worry, I've found a helicopter. And this went on for such a long time. It was joyous. That's the only way I can describe this interaction.
Becky, one of the things I found really interesting was you talk about two-stage romance scams. I just got my head around the one-stage romance scam. What is a two-stage romance scam?
So these are really horrible and kind of difficult to get your head around if you haven't heard of them before, because it just seems so unlikely. But somebody will have stolen somebody's money through a romance scam, let's say pretending to be Keanu Reeves. So the victim will have sent Keanu Reeves, let's say £2,000. Now, something happens whereby the victim twigs, they discover, and this can be through anything. Maybe they pick up on a picture that shouldn't have been sent or whatever. And they confront the scammer who's pretending to be Keanu Reeves. Now, at this point, the scammer might think, oh, God, I've been caught. But they know that that person is a viable, in inverted commas, target. So rather than say, yeah, you've caught me, see ya, they say, yes, you've caught me. Unfortunately, this is what I have to do for a living because there are no other ways of earning money. And I hate the fact I've done this to you because during the course of our conversations, I have genuinely fallen in love with you. And then they kind of reveal who they actually are and sort of beg for forgiveness. And it's interesting how often the victim of the fraud will continue to talk to that person and even send them money under this kind of new phase of the relationship. I found that really, really interesting. And the thing is, I get it. I absolutely get it. Now, in the book, I talk about, I call it that moment in inverted commas. I'm an ex gambling addict, and I recognized myself in what these people told me. So they said that they knew at this point that this wasn't real. They knew it instinctively. Every part of them was screaming. But if they didn't keep going with it, they didn't have to face up to that moment. And while you're engaging, while you're still doing this, the same with gambling, while you're still putting money in, there is that chance that it might be okay, that maybe the scammer is real, maybe you are going to win your money back. There's this real, so at that point, you really are vulnerable. And it is much, much easier to carry on. And I really get that. I really do.
The book is very much about human nature. There's something very revealing there about human nature and our wish to believe to continue the remit.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's our wish to believe. Yeah.
So packaging, chatting to fish big and thirsty men. Now, these aren't chapters in your book, but a scammer's manual that you managed to get hold of. How did you do this? And can you tell us a bit more?
So the scammer's manual. So there are a few hanging around. This one in particular, and I think we're probably going to come on to talk about it, was part of a pig butchering scam, which is something that happens over in Southeast Asia predominantly. And fraudsters are sort of given, a bit like cold calling, they're given, like you say, a manual to show them what to do, what the process is, kind of ABC, this is what you do. So packaging, this is, you have to think of as a fraudster who your character is going to be. So you might choose Keanu Reeves, you might choose an oil rig worker. So you think about who you are, how old you are, what your job is. Then you've got the chatting section, which is really where the fraudster tries to sort of get that person's interest. So you reveal stuff about yourself. The fishing big, this is a really important part of pig butchering scam. It's where you start talking about money. So you start talking about how you've made some money and how you're kind of potentially interested in sharing that with somebody. Now, the thirsty men bit, unfortunately, there are kind of four areas to this manual. And the thirsty, I think it was homosexuals, older women and thirsty men. That was the title of this fourth chapter. And I could not find this chapter online. I really wish that I'd have been able to, because I bet the stereotypes would have been glorious. But I couldn't find it, sadly. Okay.
This is where the hunt for thirsty men begins. It's kind of, we're going to find that for you. You mentioned the term pig butchering, and I didn't interrupt because I wanted to keep our listeners on a hook. Many of them might be quite confused by this reference to pig butchering. What is pig butchering?
So pig butchering is a type of sort of romance fraud crossed with investment fraud. And it is unbelievably clever. So the technology in this, it's called pig butchering because the people who run the scams, they liken the victims to pigs that have been fattened up for slaughter. So they're really complicated because there's not just the victims of the scam that are involved. The people who are running these scams, who are talking to the victims, have been trafficked into what they call scam compounds. And it's unbelievable, but they are there against their will. So if they don't meet their scam quotas per day, there are punishments, electrocutions, beatings, rapes in some cases. So it's a horrible, horrible thing for so many reasons. And these camps have been regularly found in Southeast Asia, so Cambodia, Myanmar, Laos. Now, what happens is that the victim is kind of wooed, if you like in a normal romance scam, but they don't ask for money for quite some time. When they do it because they start talking to you about some investment that they've made and that they've made a lot of money on. And they can direct you to a completely convincing looking investment page. Now you then can put your money in, you can take your money out, you can see the investment growing. So you gain real confidence in this. But then what do you know? You put, let's say, everything you've got into it because you start to think you're quite good at this, you've made some money. And then not only does the platform disappear, but so does the person you're speaking to. So it's very technologically advanced. It's using social engineering to its absolute highest. And not only that, but the people doing it are victims themselves. It's a very complicated, horrible, horrible form of fraud.
So the scammers are victims as well. And you write about this in the book. But you also write very movingly, there are often quite long case studies about the victims that lose their homes, their families, their money. I wondered which story or conversation from your research moved you the most or still keeps you up at night now?
That's an easy one, because there's one story in the book of a lady called Sue. And this one, I think about this all the time. So Sue, when she first reached out to me on Twitter, I think she was in her 70s, late 60s, early 70s, and she had stage 4 cancer. And she said to me, I really want to tell somebody this story before my time's up. So we spoke. She'd been talking to somebody who was pretending to be a soldier. He had then revealed himself to be a much younger man from Nigeria. And as with the kind of second, you know, phase 2 scam, she'd continued to talk to him and continued to send him money. And she had sent him around £30,000. Now, this was everything that she had. And she said to me that the only way that her son would ever find out about this is when she died and he didn't get anything. So I was sort of saying to her, you know, let's think about a way that we can tell your son. And Sue, you know, I didn't hear from her for a while. And then I had a message through her Twitter account saying, this is Sue's son. Sadly, mum has passed away, but I've been looking at the conversation you've had. What on earth is going on? So this lovely, lovely man, Gary, I said to him, right, this is my number. Give me a call. And it was 9 or 10 o'clock on a Friday night. And I had to explain to him what had happened to his mum. And the reason that this keeps me up at night, despite the fact that an elderly lady had been conned out of everything, was the fact that Gary said to me, I would never have been angry with my mum. I would have been angry with the scammers. Now, Sue died thinking that she could never tell anybody because he would have been angry. So she died taking that secret and that guilt with her, but there was no need. And that's what really gets me. There was no need. And Gary now has to think that his mum didn't want to talk to him. That, you know, the repercussions on that family are they're lifelong.
And it goes back to your earlier point about the misconceptions, the way you feel that others may respond to us. But sometimes we're aware that others around us are possibly in a romance scam. But it's very hard to talk to them about it, that notion of trying to change their mind or make them realize. What would you say that we should say or do to help a person realize that the relationship they think they have may not be what it actually is?
It's very, very, very difficult to speak to somebody who you think is part of a romance fraud. Romance fraud has many parallels with domestic abuse in that the fraudster will try to isolate their victim. They will sort of gaslight them, you know, that they come up with reasons why the victim shouldn't do X, Y, Z. And the problem is that a lot of romance fraudsters now, they effectively groom their victim not to talk to friends and family about the relationship. They'll say, you know, they won't understand. They'll think I'm just after your money. And of course, when you're in a relationship with somebody, you respect their wishes. So if somebody comes along, one of your friends and family, and says, oh, I think this bloke's after your money, you're going to do what a lot of people in abusive relationships do. Me, as an example from years ago, you defend that person. So my advice when you think that somebody is in a fraudulent relationship is to gently talk to them about it, to say, look, I am concerned about this. Make sure, the most important thing, I think, is to make sure that they know that should anything happen, that you are there for them. Because one of the reasons that people don't talk to their friends and family is because they think they're going to be judged or they're going to walk away. I think the most important thing to realize is that a lot of the time you're not going to change somebody's mind. You can tell them about it. You can maybe sort of point them towards websites, literature, whatever it might be. But if somebody's really in deep, all you can do is wait for them to come out of the other end and support them then and make sure that they know that you could be first port of call.
Again, it's human nature. We go back to that.
Yeah.
I'm at the risk of it sounding like you're sitting on a Graham Norton sofa, maybe Chris Fitch's deck chair, kind of an orange box. You've got a new book. Exactly. I'll drag out the deck chair. It's... You've got a new book coming out on the future of fraud. So if we're feeling like being absolutely terrified, what should we expect from that?
So that book comes out at the end of April. I will say you can order it now. And it's kind of a very much an overview of what's happening at the moment, what is going to be big in the world of fraud. So AI, crypto, that kind of thing. And then looking at what I believe that we need to change. So looking at kind of, you know, the language that we use around fraud, how we deal with people, how policing should change. It's very much an overview. There's nothing complicated in there because I don't understand anything complicated. So it's just, it's written as if it's me talking. So it's quite simple.
Fantastic. Well, Becky Holmes, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And that was Becky Holmes, author of Keanu Reeves Is Not In Love With You. Becky can be found on X by searching at Death to Spinach, and her new book, The Future of Fraud, is due out very shortly, so do look out for that one. And that's about it. So until next time, look out for Keanu, be sure to be excellent to each other, and keep on remembering that vulnerability matters. Vulnerability Matters was brought to you by the Money Advice Trust. It was presented by Chris Fitch and produced by Phil King.